It is Sunday, the 18th of January, 2015, and this is episode 233 of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome to another episode of Digital Outbox. Chris in the host seat, joined as ever by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Good afternoon, Chris. Very rarely do I get to say good afternoon, so I'm going to say
it's nearly always good evening. Yes, good lovely. Afternoon. Good afternoon. Up to anything this weekend? Been quiet?
It's been mostly quiet. Shoveling snow.
It's been such a nice weather down here. It's like total, like, I haven't seen any snow. It has got a bit chilly, though.
No, we had two. But your chili's probably like five or something.
Yeah, it's showing 4.5 on my car this morning. That's cold enough.
Yeah, so we were -4 last night.
Okay, yeah, so there we go. This week I've mostly been learning how to solve Rubik's Cube, which has been fun. But I don't know why, it just happened. But if you haven't done it yet, it's now with the internet, it's really easy.
Did you miss that fad?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Because it was just, because I'm a 78 person.
Oh, okay.
And so in the 80s when it was massive, I was a bit too young.
Yeah, because the Rubik's Cube came out and I had one, and then was all the variants came out. There was like cylinder one.
Screw that. There's millions of them now.
Yeah.
You can get like 16 by 16 cubes. Anyway, I have been deep in that world of first two layers and Frederick's method and all sorts of weird things, but I can now solve a cube, which is great.
Unfortunately, all I can think about the Rubik's Cube is The Apprentice, when the guy pulled out, when he had it on his CV, he could solve it in like X seconds.
And he didn't.
And the guy at the interview stage was just like, on you go.
Go for it.
I'm timing you. And he failed.
Yep.
What a cock.
Let's get on with some news, shall we? Apple has actually cracked down on... So this is a follow-up story to... To preface this, this is a follow-up story to last week when we told you about the 14-day no-quibble return that Apple were going to comply with European regulation on, but they have cracked down on people who are taking the piss. So it turns out that people do take the piss out of regulation like that, and now at an unspecified time, the number of times that you've returned asked for a refund, they will now instead have a pop-up which says, if you download this, you have to agree the fact that you will be charged if you actually download it, and you will not be getting a refund.
Yeah, and the guy that kind of published this in the forum post, he did say that he was ripping. You know, he was like, I'm at it. I have no intention of buying anything or paying for anything ever again. I'm just going to download, apply this rule, and then he got this pop-up after, I think it was a handful of times, he said he couldn't quite remember.
So it was in the region of $40, but he didn't actually say whether that was, you know, the first were, you know, $1 each, and then he bought one for $25 to see how far he could go.
Well, the thing is, if they just allowed you to do it, I mean, you could download like the whole Wire HD, which is now in the iTunes store. You could download all 5 series and then just say, I want a refund.
And I think that's what people were doing. I said last week I didn't think people were that cheeky, but you said they were, and you're right. There are people out there that will do that. They have no qualms about it. Anyway, so now there is a limitation on that as far as don't take the piss out of it, because if you are now taking the piss out of it, when you do want a refund, you probably will get blocked from doing it. Another follow-up on the PlayStation Xbox Live denial of service attacks that happened over Christmas. They have been being chased by several crime agencies around the world, and it turns out that an 18-year-old has been brought into custody.
Yes. So they already had somebody at 21 in London. This is a guy from Liverpool. 18. It's all kids.
Yeah.
It's all kids.
It's kids showing off, really, but doing in a way that's going to get them into some serious trouble, basically. Where it might have been a neighbour as the kids showing off, person, these guys are going after massive firms.
Yep,
and just do not take kindly to it.
No, and this was all around denial of service on, as you said, Xbox Live and the PSN network. That the second offence he was doing was swatting, which I must admit was new to me. I'm obviously old, but this is a where the false report people. So just say, like, me and you're gaming, I'll false report something to the police saying that you're a terrorist, and the SWAT police come round and basically arrest you.
Right.
And so this has seemingly become a fad.
Oh, that sounds like a fun fad.
Yeah. And so he was done for that as well.
Wow. Nice, nice chap.
Yeah.
Got his values aligned. and also making a bad name for all young people, I'm sure, along the way.
You'd really have turned into an old man just when you said that.
let's balance out. Making a bad name for all politicians and all older people. Mr. Cameron, talking out of his backside this week. Basically, he has come on record twice now and said he does not believe that any communication happening on the internet should be unlistenable to for the security services. So that's his stance, is that he doesn't believe that any communications happening on the internet should be encrypted effectively, or encrypted in such a way that he can't unencrypt it. And it's hard for me to start how I feel about this. From a technological point of view, he's pretty much said, I don't want the internet.
Yeah.
I don't know if you agree with that.
No, totally. Because not only said, you know, if something is offering some sort of secure encryption, then we want it banned. We want it that people in the UK can't obtain these apps. You know, so basically, if you want to use WhatsApp or iMessage, we're going to make it that you can't.
Or we're going to make it so we're going to force people to put backdoors in.
Yep.
Backdoors are put there to be used by maybe legitimate people, as well as illegitimate people can find access to those things. So that's just ridiculous. Just communication between server and server needs to be secure for banks, for, you know, e-commerce, anything like that. Basically, they're saying that's not allowed in this sweeping statement. Now, if you were to quiz down on him, he would tell you, no, that's not what I mean. I'm talking about email, I'm talking about, you know, these WhatsApp type apps and things like that. We want to be able to get into those, into those areas. And there's no way that they can do that. And as several articles that they're in the show notes, if you want to go and check them out, point out, there are countries around the world, some, you know, pretty, you know, tight controlled countries who do this already. And have had no success because, you know, the internet isn't a country specific technology. It's international.
It's just ludicrous. And unfortunately, it just showed you how, I mean, it's election time. So he's obviously going for, you know, a certain person in the UK. But unfortunately, a lot of people are a lot more switched on. Whoever briefed him, and I don't know whether somebody did brief him, but whoever, you know, he opened his mouth and just, like, his belly rumble on this.
It's coming from somewhere. It's coming from some poll that says that people are, you know, the Snoopers Charter, or it's coming from somewhere that they want this back. Because this is the Snoopers Charter, but again, kind of using the French terrorist attacks to gain this extra power that they just desperately seem to want.
Yeah. And I mean, the kind of post I thought that kind of rung true more for me was from Cory Doctorow, and just a couple of things that he'd put in, you know, that if you do this, you know, basically criminals, voyeurs, foreign spies can easily intercept, you know, things as well, not just, you know, UK government.
Well, a backdoor, a way past encryption, means it's not encrypted anymore because someone will find that way in.
Yep. GitHub, SourceForge, they must be blocked. you know, search engines must not answer queries about web pages that carry secure software. You know, and the list goes on of, and he's taking it to the extreme, but it's the extreme that Cameron's rhetoric kind of spawned.
Yeah, and in these things, where do you draw that line? So, you know, we've already seen that, you know, where do you draw the line when they're trying to filter these terrorist websites? Well, or terrorists, you know, and other websites. That has now spread. They use that same technology now to block anything they fancy, really.
Yeah, absolutely. The good thing, it was over in America, obviously looking for Obama to do some sort of joint statement, didn't support it. So it was a really watered down statement that they both put out because Obama wouldn't support what he was looking for if supported in any way at all.
I kind of get where they're coming from. You know, at the end of the day, if someone uses, say, a WhatsApp, it doesn't matter whether they have a court order or a warrant or anything. So even on that basis that we were upset by the technology firms when what am I trying to say? We were upset by the fact that they were trying to do this blanket statement of grab any data without a warrant. Now they're saying, well, even with a warrant, something like a WhatsApp, we cannot see that data. It does not exist. We can't get hold of it. We can't see it while it's happening. We can't see it when it's done. So that's kind of where their angle is. We've lost that communication. It's happening in secret, but I just don't see how they can reverse that. They can't turn back time.
No, and another thing is other countries around the world that do have, a lot more control over the internet and a lot more control over, the people. These atrocities still happen, so obviously they're trying to say, if we have more powers, then we can stop things like the Paris shootings. They can't.
At the end of the day, you cannot stop an individual who wants to do these things, even if the individual says they're doing it on par for something else. You just can't stop someone. And as much as they like to believe, make us believe that they can, they just can't, because people have free will.
No, and it's like,
and it is bad and good.
I mean, the thing is that the Charlie Hebdo attack was obviously what was classed as a terrorist attack, but then there was a chap down south who was setting these local council offices on fire and a farmhouse on fire. Somebody flips or somebody wants to do something, they'll go and do it, yeah. And having access to my WhatsApp messages isn't going to make a blind spit of difference.
Not unless it's constant monitoring 24/7 for every single citizen.
No.
And even then, you can just go talk to someone, Nowadays, it's almost like that's an old-fashioned idea, but maybe is one that's becoming more secure. Yeah, just go talk to someone. Facebook has made its pitch for kind of work-based communication. So it's unveiled its pilot for effectively Facebook within the workplace, and it's kind of same thing as Facebook, but just on a private network rather than open to the world.
Yeah, last year Slack got a lot of buzz around it. So this was from the guys that started up Flickr, and Slack was a kind of almost like that. It's replaced email for a lot of firms, and
it's not a day to day word though, is it? Right, I've not heard of it flinging around day to day.
Oh, I don't know.
You say it's been replaced by a lot, but are you sure?
Yeah,
that many. Okay.
Yeah, I see Slack. I guess I see it all the time.
You're in the tech community though.
Well, I mean, there's nobody at work that talks about it. Apart from me, if I look at a lot of the other podcasts that I'm listening to, or even things like, see if I look at home, and I guess it is in the community that I'm following on Twitter and what I see, but if you look at people's, iPhone home screens, you'll see most of the time you'll see the Slack icon starting to appear. And so Facebook's, I guess they're saying this is an alternative. Facebook at work, everybody's familiar with how to use Facebook. Everybody's on it, whether they want to be or not. I think a lot of people are grudgingly on it, and a lot of people are on it because they get a lot of it. You get a lot of it, I know, and you use it all the time. I think
it kind of goes in waves, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of grudgingly on it. I don't really get anything out of it, really. I'll be interested to see how this takes off, because, for me, intranets are like a dead zone.
What is clear is that there are a lot of people out there that think there's a lot of money in this particular area, because there's an awful lot of funding going around at the moment. Slack was valued by its funding release at $1.1 billion, which, it's I keep saying bubble, it definitely is. But there's clearly a lot of people think there's a lot of money in these things, and when these things hit home, there is a lot of money in them.
There is, and Microsoft bought Yammer. Yammer was like a kind of work social network that Microsoft bought for $1.2 billion, and that was back in 2012. And again, it's there, but I don't necessarily think it's really taken off. I think it got quite a lot of take up, and then it's kind of stalled.
No, but what is clear is it's definitely come to the fore again. People are, they're big players are now pushing their solutions forward.
But also, it's like for these firms, they get a lot of investment, and it's another revenue stream because enterprises do spend a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So can't ignore it.
Google Translate is now doing real-time voice and also sign translations on its mobile app. So a new Android release came out, and it uses magic elves inside the app. So say you can point your camera at a sign in a foreign country, and in real time it will replace the text on that sign as you view it. So like a virtual reality thing, and change it to your own language. We saw this ages ago. I know we talked about that, but it was kind of doing it. But now this is every day. You can just get the Google Translate app and off you go. And now it will also, in real time, take your speech and convert it to text. And you can have two people basically sat by your phone conversing in different languages, and it will real time translate, which is, again, it's just bonkers.
It is. It's amazing. So I'm just, yeah. I'm just, because I got it, because it came out in iOS as well. And see, just doing the actual, you know, you can speak and it translates for you and it comes back that quickly. It's just like, that's amazing.
Babel fish, anyone?
Yeah.
Basically, that's where it's going. You know, when we get these wearable type devices, things like Google Glass, which we'll come on to in a bit, but also, you know, when you've got an earpiece that's also connected up at the time, suddenly you're talking to someone in a foreign language in real time without having to know that language. At the moment, it's limited to sort of basically common European languages, I'd say, but they're saying it is going to flow out wider. So there we go. Brilliant. We've also, Google been mentioning their modular smartphone. Basically, this is called Project Ara, and it's a DARPA project. So DARPA, I think, were the company, weren't they the company that Google bought, which had all those amazing robots used for military purposes? I think they were.
You might be right, because I do remember last time I tried to say this, I got confused with Fringe. So
yeah. So it's very Fringe-like. But yeah, so this same company that got bought up for these like bonkers robots, I'm almost certain, I might be wrong, but I'm almost certain, and they have now turned their project to, turn their attention to this Project Ara, and this is designed to be a modular mobile phone. So basically, this is a framework which has slots in it, and into those slots, you can plug in little mini modules, be that a little camera module, be that on the front, you can have a big screen. You can choose to have multiple battery modules, for example, or maybe a 3G, 4G, sort of your connectivity module. And basically, they sort of snap in, they slide in, snap into place using magnets, and it enables you to customize your phone. So if some new technology comes out, you can take out one module and put in the other. I think we saw, there was another, I can't remember who it was, but Motorola just started thinking about a modular phone, but this is kind of taken to a big extreme. So I've watched the video, and I don't know, what did you think about this whole concept?
I think it's very noble.
Yeah, I think we're going down the like same route, yeah.
You know, so it's one of these things, it's like, almost like, sort of thing, because I think, because you're right with Motorola, they were doing something and Google obviously bought Motorola and they said they were going to continue on, and I think they've obviously brought in other people and tried to push it forward. And at the time, the previous prototype I saw, it just was like, you know, it was almost like Lego blocks. It looked, yes, too big and bulky, and it was like, this is, again, I know where you're going. And the current prototype does look better, but it still looks a bit, I don't know, I think they've been helped by the fact that everybody's going for the kind of phablet phones now, you know, and going for, you know, 6-inch phones aren't seen as ridiculous. I still think they're ridiculous, but I think for a lot of people, it's like, that's fine. And there will be a market. I think there will be some people that think, yeah, I can, you know, being able to add in, you know, 3 or 4 times battery life to sacrifice, I don't know.
Well, Bluetooth module, which I'm not using Bluetooth at all.
Example, you know, so something like that would be decent. But I think it's such a niche, small market. I just can't see it. But then, and this is what Google do, you know, they've got the funds, chase after something, you just don't know, you know.
They've also made this project into it's only a 2-year project. They're already 1 year in. So it, as they say, it kind of keeps them on their toes. They have to make decisions. They have to make decisions quickly. They can't hang around. And they reckon that actually just brings out innovation, that even if they don't end up doing this particular phone, the idea of a modular sort of technology where things can talk to each other, you know, via this sort of framework, just by plugging in and you know, just, and also, you know, not relying one thing on another, it has to be completely independent. So there's some clever things going on. The prototype they're showing, or the kind of module mock-up they're showing, is, looks attractive, but you can see the limitations of it, but also the amazing technology that's gone into it.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, it's great, and I'm sure if you're working on that project, it must be a great project to work on, because the times, you know, to your project, you have to deliver something. It does force you to make a call, make a decision.
Yeah, and they're also saying that their project is designed to be usable at scale. So they're not just designing it as a prototype. They're trying to make it into a system that they could get people on board, or they intend to get people on board, so they can show that it is a viable proposition. Now, again, we probably, even if someone brought something like this out, a very clever idea, I think we're 2-3 years away from having something that would actually be usable. It's a bit like the new 3D headsets that are going around at the moment. They're just not quite consumer ready.
And we'll see. I mean, it's getting, they've picked a territory, so Puerto Rico, it's going to get sold this year from almost like food trucks. There's 20 different modules to buy. It will be interesting from a pricing and what the take up is.
Yeah, but say you initially look at it and think that's not possible. Then you see that, oh, they're kind of doing it. And then eventually you'll see they've done it. And then sometime in the future, you'll think, wow, what they can do with those modules now. You know, it's just, yeah. Google Glass is ending in its current guise. It's they've taken it off sale. They're saying it's not the end of Google Glass. It's not. It's very much they're just coming up with a kind of new angle on it, really. But it's not good that they never got to the consumer release of the current iteration of it, really. That was something that stopped it, obviously.
Yeah, maybe the fact it was £1,000 and you look like a dork, but I don't...
Looking like a dork's kind of normal. I mean, I think we mentioned it before, when the iPad came out and they put a camera on it, everyone said, that's never going to get you. You look like a complete twonk. And, yep, how many people do it now? Everyone, loads of people.
No, I know. I don't know. It feels like it's a generation too early. You know, see if you think back to like when Microsoft brought their tablet out like 15 years ago, 10 years ago, and you could see the concept made sense, but the technology let it down. The battery life was, you know, an hour and a half, and it was really thick and it was heavy, and the touchscreen, you know, wasn't quite there. And then you look at what Apple brought out, you know, if you looked at it size-wise, you know, yes, it's thinner, but it's much the same, but everything worked.
Yeah,
and it just clicked. And I do wonder, I do think Google, there is something there. See the whole heads-up display and having the intel, you know, having something, you know, smart.
Like Terminator!
But there's something there for, I can see it in certain work aspects. I can see it when you're driving. You know, if you didn't have to look down at things, it was just telling you as you drove. And it
Not having used it, I can't comment, but I assume that it would be able to be used properly as a heads-up display. Mm. I know cars are obviously starting to do that anyway, but yeah, having maps and traffic information and directions directly there at your fingertips is great.
So Tony Fadell, so he's the guy that headed up Nest that Google bought last year. Basically, the Glass team now reports to him.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some things I saw that you know, people were saying things like, to make it a success, take the camera out, because it just does away with all the privacy issues. You know, a lot of people got freaked out with, you know, restaurants were saying, you know, especially in San Francisco, I mean, not here, but in San Francisco, there was restaurants saying it's anti-glass. You know, we do not want glass in here.
It's almost like it introduce it without the camera to get people a bit more comfortable with it, because the camera can bring so much with it, as in so many different things it can end up doing. But maybe get people a bit more used to it and then break them in gently, basically.
It was still the best keynote launch ever. You know, to see them guys parachuting out and landing on the roof.
It was ridiculous.
It was like, that's the best.
So yes, just as we're seeing Google Glass in its current incarnation sort of sidelined off, Tesco launched their first app for it. So you can now order your shopping through Google Glass in a nice, easy, straightforward way.
Now, I don't like mocking people, and I know Tesco's in trouble, but have a word someday. You know, it's like...
No, I don't mind the fact that they've done this.
Come on.
They've said it was a relatively easy development, and it was... Why supermarkets, why not look future? They've got these kind of technologies that they use anyway because of, you know, because of the way they like to monitor people around their shops. So they will have secret shoppers who are doing similar things. So Google Glass for them is a way of getting all their shoppers... like giving that data across. It's great. You think of all the data they would get out of it. Anyway, you're not convinced. Never mind. They've obviously released their software, and now
the reason I'm not convinced is just in the week that obviously there were, you know, bad results, still making loads of money, but bad results, shutting stores, laying off people. And by the way, we've launched this app for a thing that you can no longer buy. There's probably about 10, 20 people in the UK will ever use this once.
But they're probably all Tesco managers. Because they bought up a bulk of them. Anyway, okay, fair enough. Yeah, it's bad timing. And wasted money, really. Yeah. Purple, they're a UK hotspot startup. And they've managed to get themselves $5 million. Purple effectively go to companies or businesses in your area, so coffee shops, things like that. They add their own sort of login technology at the front end, so the actual coffee shop doesn't have to worry about all that stuff. You can use the coffee shop's Wi-Fi. They get all your nice customer data.
Yeah, so you're basically signing in with your social network. You're sort of signing in by Facebook, Twitter, Google, Instagram, Wow, Chinese. I know China's it's a Weibo, but Russia's Vkontakte or something. Well, I don't know.
Doing a Russian accent. Come on.
I can't. That was my Sean Connery Russian accent.
You vugun dirty.
He's like an iron bar. That just sounds like a really posh.
Oh dear, let's not do that again. So anyway, this like you say, that you signed in via your social network, and as long as it's a purple listed, you know, hotspot, you can re-sign in at any location. So their idea is basically, let's make this easy for businesses to offer this up, and they don't have to worry about all the technology. They just have to have a router that gets them access to the internet.
And it sounds interesting. Apart from, I've never heard of them.
No, nor have I. I've not seen a sign, I've not heard of them, but then I guess that's what 5 million does to you, is get wider. The chances are they go to the easy places first, you know, but until I get buy-in, I guess the thing is, as long as it's your local coffee shop that you go to that has it, you're going to sign in with them, aren't you? And if you've got a chain, suddenly it makes it easier to sign in when you come back, rather than having lots and lots of sign-ins, which is kind of the situation we have now.
Yeah, I'm just on the website to see if I could easily see, you know, like coverage.
Well, it's certainly not going to be up to some like an O2 right now anyway. Okay, while you're doing that...
No, I've given up.
Yeah, fair dues. So Spotify, still gaining paying subscribers. So not only is their user base growing, the actual people willing to pay money is growing. And I have seen... Spotify has been taken on as the default norm. All the other kind of services seem to have on the way. And even in the US, I think where it was in European only for a while, I think now it has really properly broken into the US. But they've got 60 million active users. And like I say, they're 15 million that are actually paying. That's up from 10 million last year, or just under a year ago. So they're still growing at quite a rate.
Definitely. I'm still surprised nobody's bought them.
You know, maybe they're just resistant to that until,
yeah,
you know.
Maybe. I just think they're like a kind of prime, you know, they started off as like almost like plucky upstart, and then it kind of grew. And there was all that trouble about, you know, it's you know, they're not making enough profit and they're going to go under, but they seem to have turned that, apart from the Taylor Swift's tracks.
That still happens. Obviously, you know, there's an artist that goes away, but... I don't know whether this is... I mean, lots of artists that seem to go away initially kind of came back, and it kind of goes with the labels and, you know, whoever that is. And I guess who's going to buy it? That's the problem. Because does a music label buy it? Does a music, you know, a company that specializes in music buy it? But then there's politics around, well, if certain, you know, music companies buying it, why does another company want to offer all their kind of songs on it?
I just always thought that like an Apple would buy it because they've not really got a streaming option, or a Microsoft would buy it because they've tried Xbox Music and Microsoft Music and it's just not worked.
Yeah, sure, but they did try to do it themselves, didn't they? They've all tried to do it themselves. Google Play, I think, has had some traction, but nothing like Spotify. Nothing like Spotify.
No.
Right, here we go. This is your story. I think I might leave this. Revenge is a dish best served glittery. What's that? What's that all about?
So there's a website called shipyourenemiesglitter.com, and you can go there, put in your enemy's details, and for a priceless sum of $10, a chap will get an envelope, stuff it full of glitter, and send it to your enemy.
Okay, and this is with the view to your enemy opening up this envelope and having glitter splay everywhere. Yeah?
Well, you'll see later this week. But anyway, the within 24 hours of its launch, the website was down. Because it was covered in Gizmodo, Business Insider, Reddit, and it was just like boom, it was massive. There's thousands of people who had signed up and wanted to send their enemies glitter, and he now wants to sell it because it was partly done as a spoof because he got some glittery Christmas cards over Christmas and was like, "What is this glitter? It's just the worst thing ever."
Wow, and so now he wants to sell it because he. Because the logistics of him trying to ship these things out is virtually impossible.
Absolutely.
Wow. I wonder what that's probably for. What, 1.2 billion, do you reckon, on the float?
Maybe the two.
Yeah, exactly. I'm probably underestimating a bit there.
Yeah.
Someone will buy it. Okay, brilliant. Love it. So that is the end of the news you wanted to cover. Henry isn't here. There's my brain just reading things out loud. Ian, you have a pick for us.
Thank you, Chris. It's an app called Manual, It isn't free. It's $149.
Shame on you, but you can always get a refund.
You can. And and the website is shootmanual.co.co. Okay. It basically gives you, so iOS 8 opened up access to the camera fully. Mm-hmm. And so this chap has put together a really nice camera app that it gives you full control over shutter, ISO, white balance, focus, everything you need to actually make your picture, you know, almost like a, it's not a DSLR, obviously, but it just gives you...
But you give you the same settings, so you can still fiddle with depth of field and
absolutely
all that kind of thing. Wow.
So you can start to mess around with, you can do arty effects if you just want to, you know, open up the shutter for longer, can do. And it's all other things you can do.
Nighttime shot. So basically, it's DSLR, but probably done in a really easy and much more experimental way.
It's quite similar, but see, it's all touch controls and it's just dead easy to do. And the nice thing is, see, instead of trying to have its own album and try to have its own sharing service, and then you can save to camera roll, it just saves to camera roll. So you can almost use it as a direct replacement for the camera if you want, if you mm-hmm. find it better. It doesn't do video, and I still like, things like slow-mo video and all that kind of nonsense. So you still will end up using the
camera.
It'd
be great if you could end up, if this develops eventually to, you could do your own, what do you call it, the Toy Town thing, the slip, whatever it's called. Where it makes everything look small.
Oh yeah, the I do know what it is and I can't remember.
While you think about that, I'll say thank you for that pick. That's great. So it's shootmanual.co. It costs £1.49. What a ripoff. You can find out more about us, what we do, what we talk about. digitaloutbox.com is our website. You can talk to us, info@digitaloutbox.com. We're also on Twitter as digitaloutbox. If you want to follow me, what I do, things like that. So Cheesy UK is my Twitter account, and my blog for all my racing is academyracer.co.uk. Ian.
Tilt Shift.
That's the one.
My blog is sweeper.net. Is it sweeper.net? Yeah, it's END.net. Sweeper.net was from 12 years ago.
I don't think we should do Sunday afternoons anymore. It's not. We're not on the ball.
I'm on Twitter as Sweeper.
Perfect. So thank you very much for listening, and we will talk to you again next week. Goodbye.
Ta-da. Sweeper.net.
Yeah, where did that come from?
Oh, look at that, a completed Rubik's Cube.
Mm. Now, did I buy it complete and have never wibbled it? That's what we got to get.
No, I think you've ripped the stickers off and placed them.
They're not stickers anymore.
They're
plastic laminate, so you cannot do that anymore.
Not that I would ever do that.
Not that you would have ever done that.
No.
Yeah, there you go. FTR.
FTR?
First two rows. Solve the cross FTR Friedrich's method.
My FTs were
CFOP.
Away in a different direction.
We've got prime right, left, forward, front.
You've turned into like a Rubik's Cube geek.
Yeah, I've got it still takes me a while though. I think 4 minutes, something like that.
Oh, I know.
When I watch the videos online of the demoing it, and they kind of show you how to solve a bit, they go quicker than I could pretend to go. So even if I wasn't doing anything, I was just turning it, I would drop it because they go quicker than that. And it looks like they're on fast forward and they're blooming well not.
No,
I
don't know. It's the same ones that do the cup stacking. It's just how can you move that quick?
It's like someone who can touch type quicker than you can even pretend to tap keys.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're like, oh, I'm typing. And you're like, so A, I know you're not typing, and B, you're quite slow.
Exactly. Brilliant.